Welcome to the Solid Man Podcast. I'm your host, Ken Curry, licensed marriage and family therapist. SolidMan.com is an ongoing conversation designed to empower men to master the art of being a man.
All right, gentlemen, this is what I'm calling the first relational life hack. This is about amends. And why it's a life hack is this will change your relationships. This will change the direction of your relationships. This will give you the power to be able to reconcile and to heal relationships, which is actually a pretty freaking amazing thing. To heal a relationship, most of us have no clue how to do this. So this is called amends, and you might be familiar with the 12-step process that people go through with Alcoholics Anonymous and that type of thing, and there's an amends process there. This is actually somewhat similar. My take is a little bit different, but that's what that is. So the amends process with the 12 steps is whoever you've hurt in the past, you go back and you work to reconcile those relationships. It's a pretty big deal. And so this, I'm just calling it a life hack. Actually, it could be classified as a superpower. It's a big deal. It also is really similar but different than the whole idea of No More Sorry Man. A lot of you guys have heard me talk about that, or you read my blog post about No More Sorry Man, that you'd my challenge to never say you're sorry ever again in your life. Yeah, this is pretty similar. I don't want you to say you're sorry. That's apology. Apologies, they work a little bit, but they don't really make that big of a difference when it really comes down to it. It's just usually more of a brush off. Saying I'm sorry isn't real strong. It's not powerful. Doesn't really resolve much. But being able to say I was wrong does. And that's part of what we're going to be talking about here. So the other category that's really important is the idea of the competency number 3, I think it is. And you can listen to that as well on the podcast. The third competency is ownership, or taking responsibility. That's a big part of what amends is. So if you want, this one kind of coupled with that is a pretty dang powerful thing. So let's go ahead and go to this. It's where I can read it. So let's go ahead and see where it's at here. I can't find it now. There it is. All right, so this is what I call the amends process. And amends is a process which moves a relationship toward reconciliation and restoration. So restoring a relationship requires vulnerability and openness, and that's a big thing. Vulnerability and openness for most men is something we have a hard time with. We like the wall. We like closing off. We like withdrawal. We like feeling strong and in control or powerful. Vulnerability doesn't seem like a masculine thing. But if you read into my masculinity material in Pillar 4, we're going to find out how vulnerability is, and openness is a really powerful part of our masculinity. I'm not talking about submission. That's a totally different thing. Vulnerability is just being open. And especially in a relationship, it's absolutely necessary if you're going to have a close personal relationship. And so restoring a relationship requires vulnerability and openness on the part of the one who has committed the offense or the harm. And it's also on the part of the one who has been hurt, because there's going to be responses of that person as well. And so this is a really powerful thing. If you wanted to, both you and your spouse wanted to listen to this and be able to kind of go, okay, how do we do this? How do we resolve whether she's the one that causes the pain or you cause the pain? It's just a process that you need to go through. And it's not easy, because vulnerability, openness, humility, patience, it takes a lot of really strong intention to get through this. So it's not an easy process for either person at all. And it could be something you could do not just in your closest relationships, like your marriage, but you could do it with your kids. I would require you do it with your kids if you ever screwed up, with your family, with friends, with work, co-workers, anybody that you come in contact with, anybody that you cause an offense with, anybody that you harm, it's really important to be able to come to reconciliation, especially in the close relationship. So it takes patience, grace, and calm, and listening is really required. So if you're initially unable to move through these steps because of emotional distress, whether it's an escalated intensity and things are just too hot, or you get triggered, then just do this at a different time when things cool down. Don't do it when things are hot. Take time when things are cooled off. So do this process at a time when you are collected and ready. And you may possibly need a support person like a mediator, a friend, a pastor, or maybe even a therapist to be with you as you go through this process. That really depends on how deep the offense is, how painful things are, or how long this has gone. So that'll be a potential option as well. Now, this process can feel like it's clinical or kind of wooden, where you're just kind of going through the steps. So do your best to give it some heart, give it some meaning, and allow some deep feeling into it. Let it more be about the process of reconciliation and openness rather than the content of the words you say. So be present as you write out the categories of the amends and listen to whatever arises internally inside of you and whatever comes up in the conversation. So let those internal prompts really guide you into a deeper understanding of the offense and toward the deeper connection with the people you love. So the amends process that I have here, I explain it in a four-part conversation that will take time and consideration. So here's the three parts, and one optional suggestion, the fourth part. You don't have to do it, but it's a good one. But it's more of a personal thing as well. But that option will move you toward deeper restoration of that broken relationship as well. So the first step is to take the ownership of the wrong and be responsible for the behavior. You are fully culpable. And so, like I said, if you want more information about ownership, go to, I think it's lesson four. No, not lesson. It's podcast number four, and it's the third Solid Man Competency. You'll see it on the list there. Second is placing yourself in the other person's shoes to gain an empathetic understanding of their experience when you made the mistake. And thirdly, you will intentionally make a plan to reduce or eliminate that behavior from your life. And finally, the optional one, but potentially most important part of this, is working through forgiveness and rebuilding trust. So first part is ownership statement. Second is an empathetic statement. Third is an intentional plan. And the fourth is forgiveness. So the first step, ownership, or here's what I did wrong. The initial move toward amends requires that you have full culpability, ownership, and responsibility for the action or behavior that is the offense in this situation. So owning it is a significant movement toward taking personal accountability for what you have said or what you have done. So sometimes the unhealthy actions or behavior of the other person could have been part of the interaction. However, amends requires that you take full responsibility for your actions or words, regardless of the words or actions or neglect of the other person. You must take full blame and fault for what you have said or done. You must own it without placing any blame on the other person. And this is also about accountability. And accountability is a foundation of trust. If one person has a difficult time holding themselves or being held accountable for their actions, trust will be very difficult to build, if not impossible to build. You got to be able to say you're wrong. You got to be able to own your mistakes. I'm sure you guys have been around people who just can't do that. It's really hard to be in a relationship with them. So if holding blame, fault, and accountability for your own behavior is a difficult thing for you to do, you will need to do some deeper work. So go talk to somebody about this. So know this, if you are to build trust and reconciliation in your relationship, you must take ownership, accountability for your poor behaviors. So what this is commonly called is confession. It's essentially confessing your sins. You may think of confession of the confession booth where you would go tell a priest your sins or wrongdoings. Actually, this is the same thing. You will be confessing what you did wrong. Now, confession is a pathway toward restoration of relationship. That's why you would do it with a priest. That's why you do it in prayer. You would confess your sins. And it's a pathway to restore that relationship with God. And this is restoring the relationship with other people. And this actually takes a heck of a lot of humility. Okay, you can do this. So this confession and accountability is very difficult for some people, especially if your family of origin blamed you for things you did not do. That would be called the scapegoat role, where they just cast the sin on you and let you take all the crap for the family. There's a lot of people that actually have had that role. Or if they were just judgmental and found fault with everyone else. Because it's you're finding fault and blame with everybody else. Your family taught you not to take ownership for yourself. So talk to someone about how you tend to blame, find faults in others, or hold grudges or judge people. These are indicators that ownership will be a tough growth area for you, and you got to break free from that posture and grow with intention in the amends process. This could be a really, really significant growth area for you. So taking ownership may be vulnerable and uncomfortable, but if you want to restore the relationship, allow yourself to grow in this area and embrace the challenge of saying, "I was wrong." That's actually how this statement of ownership goes. You will literally say, "I was wrong." Like, "I was wrong when I treated you poorly at the party. I was wrong when I called you that name. I was wrong when I escalated my voice and yelled at you. I was wrong when I sought the attention of my coworker. I was wrong when I brought up the past wrongdoing after I said that I forgave you for that." It could be working through a brutal offense, like, "I was wrong for having the affair. I chose to pursue another woman and completely betrayed you. Our marriage, our vows, and my faith. On many levels, that was wrong." Or it could be an offense that would need some mediation, and there would be an opportunity for questions to be asked and answers about the offense. We'll talk more about that. However, there needs to be a limit to the depth of those details. We'll talk more. That's the disclosures. General questions are fine. Details, not so much. So get help if you need it, if it's something really, really huge. Don't use the words "I'm sorry." Like I said, "I'm sorry" are just brush off words designed to get the person to disregard the offense without taking ownership. "I'm sorry" does not move you toward reconciliation. "I was wrong" does. I would say the three most powerful words in a relationship are not "I love you," but "I was wrong." This is where true restoration will have the chance to happen when you own it and speak it. Don't say you were wrong for anything you were not wrong for doing. That's just pleasing and managing moods or trying to get through the tension. Don't do that. So the big step. So I'm saying that it could be a really bad offense, or it could be something, could be like having an affair, or it could be I just raised my voice and really shouldn't have yelled at you. I was wrong when I did that. It's a total spectrum. Whenever you do something wrong, whenever you make a mistake, you can use this process. I'm just saying you could use this process, and it's much more in depth if you are having an affair or if it's something really, really powerful like that. If that's the case, then you'd need to do what's called a disclosure, and that's the written down and full disclosure of all the events and things that have happened. So instead of just doing an accountability statement where you just say, "Man, I was really wrong when I yelled at you," that's all that would statement, if it's that small, that's all it would be, is just "I was wrong when I did that." A disclosure would, the accountability or ownership statement is also called a disclosure when the offense has a betrayal or deep hurt or pain crosses significant boundaries over time. and if it's a long-term committed offensive over time. If this is the case, the ownership statement must be much more detailed in scope and will be processed with questions over time. So the disclosure must be done to the fullest extent without sharing the without being in the installment method where it's leaked out bits by bits by bits. I've had people where, you know, he would share something, I did this, and then the next therapy session, and I did this, and it was like agony for her to hear that, where it just went on for a couple months, about five different times. He just kept sharing more stuff. And you can't do it that way. The installment method does not work. It's got to be written out and done, and you got to write it all out. So not until you're ready where it's all there, and it's got to be the full thing. This is it. No more. I'm not going to add anything else to it. It sounds brutal, but it has to happen. It's the only way you can actually make it happen. Sometimes it blows the hell out of the relationship, and it doesn't. You can't get restoration because the offense is too deep. If that's the case, face it, own it, and go from there and face that consequence. But if you're going to have a relationship or it's going to be reconciled, this is the only way it's possibly going to happen. So for sure, this is kind of where that's at. Let's see. So no installment method. And then with the opportunity for the offended partner to ask questions as long as that needs to happen. So the details must be limited to how often, when, and what the offense was, why it happened, and the nature of the connection that you had with the other person. It may have been just for sex, or it may have been an emotional affair. That's really important to be able to talk about. The details of who, with names, where, places like the Marriott, or specifics like having sex doggy style need to be left out. If you tell who it is, they're going to be stalking the person. It's just every person that has the name of Jane or whatever is going to be suspect, and it turns into a really obsessive thing. So that's not the thing to do. Where, you will, trust me, you'll never go to a Marriott hotel ever again in your entire life if that's where the affair happened. Or if you did have doggy style sex with your affair partner, trust me, you'll never have doggy style sex ever again in your life with your partner. It's just, that's the way it's going to be. So the offended partner may obsess about these details, but it causes more harm to know those specific details. Like I said, you'll never go to a Marriott ever again. So if the need for the full disclosure feels necessary, talk to me about it or any therapist and see if that's part of what needs to happen, if you kind of feel like the offense is that big. Otherwise, just develop a real simple ownership statement of what you did wrong, write it down, or just say, I was wrong when I, whatever it was. So that's the confession. That's the statement of ownership. Second part is the statement of empathy, or here's how I think you might be feeling. So the second aspect of the amends is the statement of empathy, or what you imagine the other person experienced when you did or said what you did or said. Empathy is the ability to understand or identify with the other person's experience or feelings. You did something, now it's important to gain understanding of their experience. So what was it like for them when this happened? What did this make them feel? What words would describe their experience? Maybe it would be betrayed, unsafe, belittled, or unimportant. You need to put words to it. In what ways did it undercut the relationship, trust, and security? And what was that like? Was it betrayal? How deep was this? What really cut deep? Knowing this is really important. So if you find yourself with difficulty having empathy or imagining what someone else feels like or experiences, this would be your growth area. Every time anything happens like this, we're always finding out, oh, this is something I need to get good at or grow at. And if you're not good at any of these things, this is going to be something to grow with and get better at. Because trust me, like I said, this is an amazing process if you can do it well. And simply, with little short accounts or big accounts, it doesn't matter. This actually causes a ton of reconciliation. Surprisingly, especially with your kids when you make a mistake. So maybe you'll need to talk to someone else or read some books and grow in empathy, because empathy is a significant part of the reconciliation process. But even though this is tough, you can do it. Do your best to make this happen. Just be curious and ask questions and listen. As you begin to gain empathy, you'll be able to complete the following sentences. I think I have an idea what you felt when I did that. Or, you must have felt heartbroken when I did that. Or, you must feel entirely betrayed. Or, I can imagine how you've lost all sense of trust with me. Or maybe, you must feel very vulnerable and exposed right now. Or how about, I wonder if you feel insecure and unsafe, maybe even alone and rejected. Those would be you putting words to those, to what they're feeling. To help find answers to these, ask some clarifying questions to help you understand more, like, what was it like when I talked to you like that? Or, I don't know what it was like for you, but could you tell me more about what you experienced? Remember, it's kind of wooden. Some of those feel wooden and clinical, but you'll be able to ask the question in a more personal, heartfelt way. So be curious and take time to consider and listen to understand more about what their experience was as the consequence of the offense. Then vulnerably give it your best shot with what you see and hear about what they are feeling. Just give it your best shot. It's not going to be perfect. Of course, you won't know or feel fully with your empathy, but this is your open attempt at gaining a better understanding about the consequences of your actions. This is guaranteed to be clumsy and awkward, but trust the process. Do your best. Ask for clarification rather than getting defensive if these things get tense. So, what would your empathetic statement be? So, take some time with that. The response letter. So this is if the offense was great enough to require a disclosure, like I was just talking about in the first step, there may need to be a response letter. And this will be a written document outlining the experience and feeling of the offended party and any observations and other questions that may still be unanswered. This increases understanding and empathy of the depth of the pain or trauma of that event. It also helps with clarifying any unanswered questions or loose ends. So that may have to happen depending on the level and severity of the event. The third step is intention, or here's what I'm going to do so this won't happen again. The intention statement is essentially making a plan to make sure this occurrence is most likely not going to happen again, or on some occasions. And if it's a non-negotiable, so it never happens again, period. The goal here is to do the work needed so that this behavior is no longer part of your life. This is an important thing to provide in your relationship so that trust is built. Depending on the level of offense, recovering from an affair will take so much more time and work than a badly timed name-calling event. You will basically engage in project management. It's a process. You guys know project management. Everybody does that at work. So it's moving you from point A to point B like you would with any project at work. You may create boundaries for yourself, read a book on the subject, pursue therapy or spiritual guidance. You may create some clear ground rules for conflict in your relationship. It may look like a six-month dive into the world of understanding anger or emotions or how the brain works. Taking an anger class, reading four books, and talking to a therapist about navigating anger in your life, or maybe trauma, shame, how porn is such an important thing to you. Whatever it is, your intent is to do anything it takes to learn, change, and grow in such a way that the likelihood of this happening ever again is decreased significantly. This, like all these things, is about change and growth. You'll want to go deep into the core of the problem. First order change is just changing your behavior. That's called white knuckling. Don't drink, don't drink, don't drink. Or don't look at porn, don't look at porn. You know, it works for a little bit. It's not sustainable. What you're looking for is second order change. It's about taking care of the deeper issues where you process in your internal world of your identity, your beliefs about yourself, what's driving your desires, what your addictions provide for you, and how it is that you ended up like you are. If you want real change, take ownership and make it so. If you are the offended one, it is essential that you learn to set boundaries and say no. A boundary is a line in the sand dividing healthy behavior from unhealthy behavior. It is saying, I will not subject myself to this behavior again. And then creating a boundary communicating what is right and wrong to you and what you want in the relationship. These boundaries will help to develop a plan and make sure things are clearly communicated what is good or bad with the behaviors that are done. So with this, your intention plan, what plan would you make to make sure that you will not do this behavior, point A to point B? It's, let's say, point A is I yell and scream, point B is I calmly communicate in a much more mature fashion. What's going to move you from one way to the next? Point A might be, I'm very involved in trying to get external validation from women, and I've done that through affairs, flirting, emotional affair, and porn. Point B would be, I'm going to give 100% of my sexual energy to my partner, and I'm not going to be distracted with my sexuality, and I'm going to be very mature with how I move in my life as a sexual being. That's point B. How am I going to move from point A to point B? It's an incredible gift to give to your partner. So what's your intention statement? So write down, here's what I'm going to do so this never happens again. The fourth, and I call this optional, but it is a very important part of the process. So forgiveness is optional because it's each individual's choice and responsibility to provide forgiveness or not. So you might go through this process, but whether the person forgives you or not, that's their essential issue, not yours. This is not something you would do. You're not, you know, you could forgive them, but that's why it's an optional part of the process. But it's still a really big part of it. So let's see. It could be something that has, this could be something that has to do with your faith. You may feel like you don't have faith or not, and this isn't a thing that you would do. That's all right. But if it is part of your process, great, and make it so. So forgiveness is not forgetting. It's releasing the penalty for the offense. If you forgive the person, you'll no longer hold the penalty over their head or hold resentment in your heart. You will remember because whatever happened is now part of your story. You're not going to forget this. Forgetting is not part of forgiveness, regardless of what you've been told. This is going to always be part of your story. Forgiving is a commitment to release the penalty for the offense, to let it go. Often the process of forgiving takes time, sometimes a quite a bit of time and effort. So this is letting it go. A lot of people feel like, okay, I'm forgiving. If there's something to be done, I'll let God deal with it. I'm not going to carry the penalty. This is not mine. Let me see if I can explain it a little bit further. So the legal system uses forgiveness at times. A judge actually has the power to give the full penalty of the law and sentence a person to extreme punishment, or they can actually show mercy and forgive and release the person of that punishment. It's really interesting that a judge has that capability. So mercy is a release of the punishment, not getting what you do deserve. If you have ever experienced this, you know what it feels like. It feels amazing. And often very unexpected if you do receive mercy. So debt is another category, a significant aspect of forgiveness, and helps us understand how forgiveness works. When someone owes you something, that is debt. There's a repayment that has to be made to settle the tab before the debt is released. You got to pay me the $10 you borrowed from me. If you don't, you're in debt, and not until you are able to pay is it settled. And so the settlement finds the balance and the release of the debt or the penalty. But if you continue to pay, have that, then there is debt. So forgiveness is the offended party releasing the debt before the debt is paid. So if you owe me $10, I go, No problem. I release your debt. You don't owe me $10 anymore. As the offended party, I have that power, like the judge had the power. So any offense places a person in debt. They now owe the offended party a penalty or repayment for that offense. Forgiveness changes that process, bypassing the need to settle a debt or repay a penalty. Forgiveness is a completely different way to approach relationship offenses. The letter of the law would require that the debt be paid in full before there's any settlement or reconciliation of the relationship. That's the law. Forgiveness bypasses the law and creates a new path toward relationship reconciliation. It's a totally different way to do math. It's kind of crazy, actually. But it's really cool and works beautifully in relationship. So let me use a parable that Jesus tells in the Bible to explain this further. So Jesus tells a parable in Matthew 18, verses 21 to 35. He says this, Then Peter came up to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times?" And Jesus answered, "I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times." Sounds like Jesus was big on forgiveness. Let's see what he says. He says this parable, "Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him." Now remember, 10,000 talents, we'll get back to that. "Since he was not able to pay the 10,000 talents, the master ordered that he and his wife and all his children and all that he had to be sold to repay the debt. At this time, the king was going to enslave his whole family to repay the debt. So at this, the servant fell on his knees before him. 'Be patient with me,' he begged, 'and I will pay back everything.' The servant's master, the king, took pity on him and canceled the debt, all 10,000 talents, and he let him go. But when that servant went out, he was on his way home, and he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii." Now remember, 10,000 talents or 100 denarii. I'll tell you more why this is significant. "So he grabbed him and began to choke him. 'Pay back what you owe me,' he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged to him, 'Be patient with me, I will pay it back.' But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what happened, they were outraged and went and told the king everything that had happened. Then the king called the servant in. 'You wicked, wicked servant. I canceled all your debt because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant, just as I had on you?' In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed." Jesus then says, "This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you, unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart." Now here's the thing. Jesus is a master storyteller here. He gives us a huge illustration of forgiveness and debt. We couldn't see it unless someone told us how much a talent is or how much a denarius is. But here's what it is. One talent is 20 years of labor. One denarius is one day of labor. So the second servant had owed 100 denarii, which is, let's say, roughly $80 per day times 100. That's $8,000, right? So the second guy owed $8,000. The first guy owed 10,000 talents. Remember, one talent is 20 years of labor. So 10,000, I'm talking, Jesus is exaggerating this, it's great. So 10,000 talents, what the wicked servant of the story owed, was essentially, let's see, gosh, I can't even, 20 years, oh, I'm not even adding this right on my thing here. I've got it, 20 years of labor times 30, 20, 30, no, I'm not even doing this right. So 30,000, that's not right. Anyway, it comes out to about $6 billion, all right? I'm horrible at math, but the thing is, so here, $8,000 or $6 billion. That's the exaggeration that Jesus makes. The first servant owed $6 billion, and the king said, I'll give that, I'll release that. And the second one, only $8,000. It's quite a difference. And Jesus told his audience would have been shocked. They knew the obvious exaggeration. And so this is the same for us. We have been forgiven much. Therefore, the obvious turn would be to forgive much. If we hold bitterness and resentment in our hearts, the other person will not feel the pain much except for the distance or tension in the relationship. But we will experience the negativity and grind of what bitterness does to our soul. Remember the saying that says resentment is like drinking poison, hoping the other person will die? Well, you're the one who actually experiences the negativity by not forgiving. And in this, the idea of forgiveness gives a brilliant path toward freedom and relationship reconciliation. Forgiveness is good for the soul and releases so much negativity. So don't forgive prematurely. Wait till you know you're ready to release it. Wait till you're ready to let it go. If you're still holding on to it, if you still have resentment, you know, you've not really let it go, it will come up to you again and again. Like you'll always bring up the past in an argument, and that's not okay. Forgive, but give it the time you need before you say, I forgive you. As the offending one asks, will you forgive me? Give the offended one the time they need in order to let it go and to let go of the debt. So if you've done these first three steps outlined in the process, you'll be more prepared for the process of forgiveness. I just want to clarify what forgiveness is: releasing the debt, releasing the penalty, and forgiving the offended party. And it's just part of the process, so give it time. So what do you feel about forgiveness in the situation that you're in? And what resentments are you holding on to, and who do you need to forgive? Think about that for anybody in your life. It's a really big deal. If you're still hanging on something from back in 1975, that would be me. I'm that old, you're not. Let's see, 2015, somebody did something to you. Then that would be, I need to let it go. I need to go back to that. And I don't even have to tell the person anything. I can forgive without the other person even knowing it. And so what would it look like for you to ask for forgiveness? And are you ready for that? So here's a few other important questions just to wrap up for today. Do I need outside help, like a therapist or a spiritual guide? Do I need to do a full disclosure process, or is this just a simple, I was wrong when I did this or that? Are there legal ramifications? And if so, should I consult an attorney? That could be a case. And what will this mean for the future of my relationship? Now, what I'm saying is the future of your relationship, this is going to be a very powerful thing. That's why I'm calling it a life hack. If you can get good at this, things are going to be totally different. So go do the amends, forgive well, speak well, own it, have empathy, really do this with a lot of heart, a lot of effort, make it happen, and it'll change everything in your relationship. And as always, gentlemen, stay solid, my friends.